To Want a Boy, Chapter 7. I didn't get another loadout for 3 days. I was sick of California, so I waited for one heading in the other direction. I took New York. I was almost sorry by the time I got there. It was a very dull trip, made worse when they had no load for me to go on with. For the first time in my years of driving, I'd brought along some decent clothes. At least I wouldn't be embarrassed if I walked into a hotel. I didn't go so far as to bring a suit. That really would have been drastic for me. But I did bring my good sport clothes, and it was kind of an adventure changing and heading out to see the big town. I had absolutely no idea where I was going or even what I was looking for. I had no urge for a repeat of the action at the hotel. I really wasn't looking for action at all. At least, I didn't think I was. I took a cab first. The warehouse district is never the better part of town. It's rarely even a very interesting section, at least not to me. I asked the cab to take me to a hotel that was centrally located enough that I could sort of look around by foot. He asked if I was sure that's all I wanted, and when I assured him yes, he drove me $2.30 worth away and dropped me off. I was in the heart of Manhattan, surrounded by tall buildings, and there were interesting little shops for blocks in any direction, along with bars, restaurants, penny arcades, and movies. I have no idea how far I walked that evening. I had some good Italian spaghetti, a couple of beers, then went and checked into the hotel. All the bellboys reminded me of Bertie in Portland. I decided I'd get the hell out of there. I managed to do without sex for nearly 20 years. There was no reason I now should have to have it every time I laid over for a night. Besides, something about buying it or picking it up revolted me. The months of looking forward to my trips to California made a permanent relationship mandatory. I don't know how I intended to come up with a permanent arrangement without making my once known, but I wasn't really doing much logical thinking these days. I simply had no urge to initiate an affair myself. I know how I would have felt and reacted if someone propositioned me several years ago. The possibility of being embarrassed by refusal made me shudder. I strolled down the streets, looking at the people out for a big evening, and it was kind of lonely. There was a bar that looked plushy down the block. I didn't particularly want a drink, but you never feel quite alone when you're sitting at a bar. People banter back and forth with the bartender, and even if you never open your mouth, you feel included. I strolled on in. The place was indeed plush. Kansas never saw anything like this. Perhaps that's not really fair. When I want a beer, I usually buy a can or wander down to the local pizza parlor. I've never been one to, as we'd say in Kansas, put on the dog. Out in California, Bob helped me shop for sport clothes, and I had so much confidence in his judgment that now I could feel at ease, even in this place. I sat at the end of the L-shaped bar where I could see all the faces of all the other customers. They were mostly men with a few women here and there. All ages, all shapes, but all were dressed up more than I. They looked like they were on their way home from the office, some plush office I gathered from their conversations. I ordered a beer and, quite frankly, I enjoyed the little accent to their voices, the New Yorkism so different from the speech patterns I was used to. I enjoyed and listened to this more than any actual words or sentences they said. Until a pretty high fella halfway down the bar started telling me about the big faux pas he'd pulled the night before. "Never have I ever pulled such a dum-dum," he laughed. We had one of those long sessions on the budget. They had martinis trying to make up for keeping us past the cocktail hour. Well, I'd had it, and budget doesn't get me to meet anyway, so I kept pouring things down, and by the time the meeting was over, I was pretty well stoned. "Did your boss notice?" a faded blonde next to him asked. "Ah, hell no," he laughed. "We helped each other down the elevator." Everyone laughed. Well, my boss was on his way to the club. He invited me, of course, but I can't go home without saying hello to Harry here. He motioned to the bartender, and Harry took a very formal bow. Everyone clapped again. Like I say, I was stoned. I've walked 3 blocks south and half a block east to get to Harry's for 3 years, but last night I walked 2 blocks south and a chorus of, "Oh, no," stopped him. "Mm-hmm, and a half block east to the kitten," he finished in triumph. "Did one of those swishes mob ya?" one of the men asked. "Did they? It was like fresh meat thrown into a river full of starving piranhas. Did I ever sober up fast?" Now every word of the conversation stamped itself onto my brain. "Well, did you stay and party?" Harry laughed. "I never saw you in there last night." "Hell, I should have, the way my wife's been treating me," he bantered back. "I don't think I've sobered up so quick in my life. I didn't want to hurt their feelings. Hell, some of my best friends are queers, but..." Another chorus of, oh, stopped him. "Don't be ridiculous. You know what I mean. Every artist in my company is as gay as they come. They're not a bad sort, as long as they keep the hands off of you. None of the guys where I work could be so gross.
I've always wanted to peek in that place. Do they dress like women?
The blonde asked. Nah, that's over in Greenwich Village. These people are businessmen and so forth that work here in the asphalt jungle. Imagine some work on Broadway. People like that. Of course, they didn't really mob me, but it sure was funny when I realized where I was.
I imagine, Harry opined.
I'd finished my beer, and now I was overcome with a burning curiosity. If they didn't look like women, how did this guy know they were queer? Bob hadn't looked queer. The man he brought to the truck that day hadn't looked that way. Bertie was small, but he wasn't a pansy. How could a man tell, anyway? I sat a while longer, not wanting to jump up right after the talk of the kitten, and then I got up, laid a tip on the counter, and strolled casually toward the door.
Good night, called Harry.
Good night, I returned. Funny how friendly people are in bars. I walked west up to the corner and turned north. I tried looking in windows and strolling, but then I decided that was silly, and I marched determinedly to the end of the block, crossed the street, and turned east to the kitten club in the middle of the block. I slowed at the entrance, saw nothing peculiar, and strolled in. It was very dark. I wondered how anyone could know they were in a queer bar if they couldn't even see. Gradually, I made out the bar over to my left and headed for it. The bartender was a Negro, just about as big as me. I sat down and ordered another beer. I looked down the line of faces in the mirror, but quickly returned my eyes to the counter. Everyone, it seems, was examining the stranger. He brought my beer, and I studied it pretty thoroughly, trying to tend to my own business. Finally, all the conversation resumed. It wasn't much different, really, than what I'd heard at the bar in the next block. Occasionally, I'd hear a voice that sounded a little too effeminate, but the talk was mostly shop. I almost snickered when I thought about the guy that had told the story. To a Kansas ear, the sophistication and smart talk absorbed by many New Yorkers made them all sound gay. I had another beer. Now I could sneak occasional glances at the other customers at the bar. They didn't look particularly queer to me. Maybe the hands were more fluttery, but then maybe New Yorkers just use their hands to talk more. I'll be damned if I could tell. The man next to me turned to the bartender, who was emptying the ashtray.
Randy, tell them, will you?
What, Mr. Beatty? The bartender answered.
Can you get a decent suit ready-made? I mean, did you ever find anything in your size?
The man smiled, sure of the answer.
No, I have to have them made, he answered.
Fiddle, he just hasn't looked, the other man scoffed.
Oh, yes, please, I have, sir. I most certainly couldn't enjoy paying the price of a tailor these days.
You there, the other man pointed suddenly at me. You don't have to go to a damn tailor every time you need a suit, do you? I laughed.
I don't have to go to a tailor, I answered, because I don't happen to own a suit.
They all looked terribly shocked at first, and then embarrassed, but I'd had enough beer by now that the whole thing seemed funny.
I'm sorry, the man began to apologize.
What for? I asked now, thoroughly enjoying their consternation. I don't like a tie throttling me. I don't like squeezing into a dress jacket. I just don't like dressing up, and where I come from, we don't just bother much.
Oh, sudden comprehension. He's a tourist.
Nope, I laughed. I'm in the trucking business. I got stuck here for overnight, that's all. Tomorrow I'll be on the road, and no New Yorker will have to look at this uncouth slob no more.
I envy you, said the bartender. It must be great to wear what you damned please.
Amen, said the man next to me. I like it, I told them, suddenly in control. Suddenly the envied one. I go where I please, when I please, and I wear and say what I please. Now the Negro laughed.
That's not a job you got, man. That's paradise. You're dead and you just don't know it.
Now the man next to me turned and appraised me carefully.
How can you go where you please?
He asked. Simple, I answered. It's my truck. When I pull into a warehouse, I just sign on the next load that's going in the general direction I'm heading. Of course, you have to be with a nationwide setup to do it.
You own your own truck? The man asked.
Yes, I stared right back at him. And you don't own a suit? He frowned.
No, I don't own a suit. And yes to your next question, I can afford it.
A tinge of irritation was creeping into my voice. The man reached over and took my arm. Don't get sore, please. My name is Evan Sachs, and I'm in the men's ready-wear. I own a factory, so a man that does not want to own a suit very much interest, or should I say, concerns me deeply.
Bert Schrader is my name, I told him, and we shook hands. That took care of another question. His handshake was firm and manly. I must be on a wild goose chase.
They asked me all sorts of questions and finally suggested the three of us move to a booth where it wouldn't be so noisy. Sure, I said, and followed them toward the booth, but then I had to excuse myself. The beer had gone its route and was screaming to be released. I walked into the bathroom and was instantly sober. Four men were standing at the urinal in the center of the room. Two were taking a leak, and two had hard-ons that were damned obvious. They couldn't help but see the shock on my face, and they turned and headed back for the stalls. My face was burning. I was sure one had had his hand on the other as I walked in. I wasn't nearly as shocked as I was stimulated. I held my eyes on the floor and concentrate mightily as I walked over to the urinal and unzipped my fly. If that goddamn prick came out bonging, I'd chop the son of a bitch off. The door behind me opened as I fumbled with my zipper. The two that were taking a piss zipped up and moved away. Now at least nobody was directly across from me or in my range of vision, so I pulled out old Long Nose out and he behaved. I spurt once and then flowed in a long, full stream. I knew I wasn't alone. Someone was coming up behind me, and I hurried as much as I could, but that's sort of like trying to run in a sea of honey. There was just too much beer. Then I heard a gasp beside me and jerked my head up to see Evan Sachs staring down at my exposed manhood. God, it's huge, he whispered, and his voice was hoarse. I shrugged and looked away, thanking the powers that be for the stream that prevented me from giving myself away. I sensed more than he saw, him open his fly and pull out his tool. Do you know what kind of bar you're in, Bert? He asked. Yes, was about all the answer I was capable of at the moment. Do you know what kind of a bar it is? What kind of people frequent this bar? He asked, making sure. I nodded. The last spurt of yellow fluid jerked out. I glanced over, and he was holding his own smaller tool, but he would not be taking a piss now. His rod was erect and full. Instantly, my own reacted. I just shook the last drip from its tip, and now I tried vainly to stuff it back into my pants, pretending not to notice his swollen flesh, and hoping to God he hadn't seen mine. It was bad enough buying it or picking it up, but I sure couldn't see taking it in the stall of a man's can. He went along with me, but as we turned to leave, our eyes met and held for a long moment, and I knew I'd get no sleep this night. Are you in any rush to go anyplace? He asked. Nope, I answered. Carl could be a bit difficult to get rid of. He seemed to be at a loss for words. I shrugged like it didn't matter one way or another. He opened his mouth to explain, but just then Carl burst through the door like he was out to catch his wife in bed with a traveling salesman. He seemed totally unprepared to meet us halfway through the exit door. His mouth dropped, then he burst into a relieved smile. Well, here you are, he exclaimed. Just a moment, I have to take a piss. Evans and I leaned against the wall and chatted while we waited for Mr. Jealous, and jealous he'd obviously started out to be. I could fit you with a suit that would be just as comfortable as in the outfit you're wearing, Evans grinned. They don't make comfortable ties, I balked, but our eyes were talking a story of an entirely different nature. They have ties out now that don't even go around your neck, he argued. His eyes promised me much. Bull, you mean like kids wore with a rubber band? I asked, but my eyes said, I need you no matter how hard I tried to hide it. Heavens no, cried Carl over his shoulder as he tried to draw our attention. That went out with celluloid collars and high-button shoes. I'll show you, Evans said, meaningfully. Carl joined us and we returned to the table. Carl carefully worked it so that one of us was on either side of him on the horseshoe-shaped booth. The talk droned on and on. Once I felt a hand brush my knee, and when I looked across and was certain it could not be Evans, I jerked my knee quickly and significantly away. Evan tried time and time again to break away without Carl, but Carl would have no part of it. Finally, I decided to give him a hand. What the hell was the use of sitting there passively waiting for him to take care of every little thing like I was some helpless female? Do you really think I could be comfortable in a suit? I interrupted another discussion of who was too tired to go home. Certainly, they both agreed. Then I think I'll just come down tomorrow and give it a try. You sell retail? I asked, looking Evans hard in the eye, praying he'd catch on. To you I would, to prove a point! Evans laughed, but his eyes searched mine quizzically. I'll take your measurements myself to make sure, Carl chimed in. I'm Evans' top designer. It's settled then, I nodded. Do you have a card? Evans suddenly looked defeated. I knew he didn't want to wait, and that's what he thought I was proposing. I smiled to myself. He reached into his wallet and started to pull a card from a pack. I reached over and pulled it out so quickly, and he jumped back a little surprised. I better write what this is for, or I'll forget. I have so many cards. I quickly wrote down the name of the hotel and the room number. Then I looked up at him again. Oh, I'm sorry, I got more than one. Here, and I handed him the card with my address. He was no dummy. He understood immediately. I finished the last swallow of beer and reached my hand across to Carl. He took it like a wet sponge. It's sure been a pleasure talking to you. I was heard New York was an unfriendly town, but I can tell people now that just isn't true. It's been just a delightful evening, Carl gushed. We'll see you tomorrow. I shook Evan's hand, careful to keep the contact brief. So long, I said, and left. Now I walked hurriedly, shaking with anticipation. I was going to spend the night with a man. A businessman, like myself. A man that didn't buy it or sell it. Now, maybe, I'd be able to find out how to live with this thing. I must remember to ask him everything. Afterward. My body ached for the time to pass, for him to hurry. And what will I do if he doesn't come? Oh, God. What will I do if he doesn't come?